to everybody again. It is September 23rd. We're here on Tuesday evening. Here's Father Scott. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
How was your day, Father Scott?
It was very blessed, thanks.
All right. Well, we're just getting things going with our podcast tonight. Had another busy day. So we're going to take you through a little bit of the tour. We got Anthony and Roger working on the computer right now. Father Scott just passing through, and Julie and Josh Swaim are working on a little ping pong practice right now, getting better at their gaming skills. And this is Joshua again here with the podcast. So we'll start off early in the morning. We got up pretty early today and headed off to the Mount of Olives. And I got to ask Roger, what was your impressions when we got to that garden and saw some of those trees there?
Well, it was pretty interesting, I guess, to see those. I mean, it was kind of gave you a feel, I guess, more for it was actually a visual for what this scene might have been like when Christ was here, living and walking on the earth. So it was pretty cool to see those, some of those being 2,000 years old.
Yeah, and Anthony, I don't know how much you remember about Mass, but tell us about like the sanctuary when we walked in. We're at this church on the Mount of Olives where Christ, you know, spent some of his last days, you know, preparing in prayer for the passion that was to come.
Well, I thought it was just incredible because we were able to walk in and the first thing you saw was a rock floor in front of the altar. And that rock floor was the rock where Christ himself laid and possibly was praying at that very spot to God, his Father, in agony for what was to come.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible scene.
Yeah, and then for us to be able to celebrate Mass as well, and you know that Christ was here 2,000 years ago at that very spot, and then again that same day with us as well as we celebrated the Eucharist, which I thought was pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the things that strikes me every day is that we go to see all these holy places, and then every day we have the opportunity to celebrate Mass and join with Christ in the Eucharist in one of these amazing places. And today it was on the Mount of Olives, and tomorrow it will be at the Church of St. Anne.
That's right.
And then on Saturday we'll be building up to that at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre,
yeah,
at the place of his crucifixion, death, and resurrection.
Yeah.
So from there, we got to take some really nice pictures of the trees and then look at the garden and headed off to a nice spot in town where we had a panoramic viewpoint of the entire old city. And for those of you at home who may not know, Jerusalem, it's a town that's kind of laid out east to west. And on the very east, no, yeah, on the very eastern edge of the city right now is what we call the old city, which is about a 1 mile square part of town. It dates back, you know, to the time of Christ and before, and has big fortified walls that surround the city. And so that section is where we, you know, you have the old city and a lot of the churches, the Church of the Sepulchre, and the mosque on the Dome of the Rock. And
I think that was probably the point where I really understood how the city and how the area looked 2,000 years ago, because you could overlook the Judgment Valley there. You could see the Dome of the Rock, the old ancient city walls from where we were above the Jewish cemetery there. At the the mosque of the Ascension, right? Yeah. Yeah. So,
Anthony, what did you think about the view that we had from both the Garden of Gethsemane and the Mount of Olives in relation to where the city of Jerusalem was and how that may have played out for Christ?
I thought the distance was quite far. You know, it was quite the distance to travel for him to go and then go down a valley and then back up to where he would then be persecuted and then put to death. I kind of think that symbolizes a lot of things that go on in our life. We always have the uphills and downhills in life, and I thought that was kind of a neat way to look about it.
Yeah. And, you know, while at the same time it's a far distance to walk, because you, on the Mount of Olives, go down a valley and then back up the mountain to the city, it was a straight shot of a view. You know, even though it was a long walk, it's an excellent view. And you can imagine, I mean, the temple is gone, but the Temple of Solomon being there, Christ knowing what was coming and having to look at that while he prayed.
That was, yeah. It just gave me chills too, to look out and to see the overall picture, like Roger was saying. And I look forward to the rest of what we're going to see on this trip, because each day is a surprise for us.
Yeah. So from there, we took off walking down the hill, down the Mount of Olives, and to the I guess the bottom of the valley where our bus was waiting. And we took our bus, and it drove us uphill, then to the which gate did we head to?
Jaffa Gate.
That was the western wall.
Yeah, it was the western wall, and we went in through the
Demetrius Gate.
The Dung Gate?
Dung Gate.
We went into the Dung Gate, yeah. But for the first time, you know, we get to make our way into the city. Mentally, in a few sentences, just kind of capture the sights and sounds of what you were first impressed upon when we go into the old city.
It was an incredible rush of people just everywhere, walking and busy, doing their business, buying, shopping, selling, and viewing. And I just imagine myself 2,000 years ago in that same spot with all of the same vendors there doing the same thing that they're doing today. Yeah. Oh, that was pretty neat.
And what'd you think, Roger?
I thought it was a sensory overload. I mean, it was just, you know, it was very busy, very, very active. Something that you don't see back home for sure. All the activity and all the vendors and the artisans and the craftsmen and just people trying to sell their goods and make a living, really. You know, you definitely have to have a plan before you go into any of the shops before you enter.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, I'll get back to you guys here in a little bit. I'll let you get back to working on the computer for the other parts of the blog. And I'm going to go talk to Josh and Julie for a bit. Thanks, guys. So Anthony and Roger mentioned, you know, we get to the city and it's kind of a sensory overload. And there's so many shops and vendors selling different things. And I think for us, it really captured what life must have been like 2,000 years ago. And you have the same streets and the same stones that people would have walked on then. And it's all this kind of been captured in time. And you know, when you think about foods and spices for sale, you know, they're not refrigerator coolers and nicely processed and packaged meats and spices in jars. There's a big sack with piles of spices laying in it. And there's, you know, fresh meat hanging out before you just see, and fruit just piled up. You know, and a dozen different languages going on around you. I think today we heard, you know, we were speaking English, but then Arabic and Hebrew and Spanish and Italian. And gosh, I'm just trying to think of all the different languages we've heard in the old city. What else can you remember any of them, Julie?
German, I don't know if you said that.
German,
yeah.
Ukrainian, Russian. Pilgrims from all over the world coming together in the city. And it's kind of like it would have been when Christ was here and the temple was still active, with pilgrims coming from all over the Jewish world to sacrifice at the temple. You know, except now we've got the three major religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Josh, what were your first impressions of the old city?
Oh, gosh. I think it just, for the first time, really on this pilgrimage, you got the sense of this this historic city. It's something that I don't know that we have over in America, because, you know, many of these roads, they weren't built for cars. You know, they're lined with stone, and they're very narrow, and the city is built up around them. And it's beautiful, and the uniformity of the Jerusalem stones and how the entire city basically is built with them, and just the different ways, even though it's all the same thing, the different ways that you experience the architecture, I suppose. Sometimes it's a beautiful archway, sometimes it's like a narrow street, sometimes you're walking downstairs and you realize that, hey, after a Jerusalem stone takes some wear, it becomes pretty slippery.
Now, Julie, so after making our way through kind of parts of the old city, we had a destination in mind, the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, which is in reference to the Temple of Solomon. The Western Wall of the Temple is the only thing that remains, and it is it's a holy site for Jews, where they go to pray for the restoration of the Temple, for the Jewish people, for whatever their intentions may be. What's that scene like for you?
Well, you know, when we first got there, you kind of see this big area, and I didn't realize at first, but it was only men, and it was very, you know, spread out. There was lots of room there, and I was thinking to myself, after you know, stand there looking at it for a while. Where are the women?
Where were they?
Yeah, they were, you know, in about a fourth of the size area next to it. And it was just, you know, we went in there. It was just so crowded. You really, you kind of had to wait in line to go up there and, you know, put your prayers in the wall, as most people did. But it was interesting, too. I was talking to some of the women afterwards, and we were surprised at the number of young people that were there at the wall. And that was kind of neat to see as well. You know, it wasn't just older pilgrims, but people of all ages that came, you know, to see the wall and to leave their prayers.
Yeah. So did you put a prayer on the wall? Did you write on a piece of paper?
No, I didn't. You'd get me again.
I just have a knack for asking these questions. Josh, did you?
I did. It wasn't something that I'd necessarily planned beforehand. You know, just something simple, not necessarily a specific intention that I'm looking for that prayer to be answered, but, you know, in general for just for grace and for encouragement to keep strong in faith. And I think there also is probably something on there about peace in the Holy Land, some general things like that that I think in a place like Jerusalem that has so much history and so much depth of the faith traditions that are there, it just made me think of, I guess, broader and more expansive intentions like that.
I wasn't necessarily paying attention to the men's side, but on the women's side, they told us beforehand to back away from the wall and not to turn your back on it. But I don't know if you guys saw that on the men's side.
Wow, that's really interesting. They never mentioned that to us on our side.
Yeah.
One thing they were very clear about with the men's side is that we had to have our heads covered.
Okay.
Jews, non-Jews, if you went in, you had to have a cap on. You know, some guys left their baseball hats on, and some of us put kippahs on, which is that skull cap that you see Jews wearing a lot. And so they were very clear on that. And the wind blew one time and took mine away, and I got kind of told to put it back on quick, and I didn't know what to tell them. The wind blew off. I went and got it as quick as I could.
Most of them kind of pinned it on, but we didn't have any, you know, bobby pins in our pockets, obviously.
Not the common thing to have anymore. So as we left the Western Wall, we got our first taste of city shopping. Spent a good amount of time going from vendor to vendor and checking things out, religious goods of every sort, as well as, day-to-day goods that people need, food and household supplies. This is not just a pilgrimage site, but an active living city where people call home. But we tended not to go to those stores as much as the religious goods shops. So, lesson number one in bargaining with religious goods vendors, Swaim, what would you say that is?
I would definitely say, give yourself some time. Go out early in the week. Get an idea of the ballpark that you're working with. Do a little haggling. Sort of get an idea for what a good price would be, or at least what you think a good price would be. I know at one point today I just said, you know, something about being here as a pilgrim, only here for a week. I don't know if I got a good deal or not. I know it's a lot less than what he originally offered me, but that's about as much as I can do. But I thought it helped being out the other day and then being able to go back later and know that, okay, this is about the ballpark I'm working with, so that I felt like I got a lot better deals.
Yeah. So I guess it's a good idea to know what you're working with. Julie, do you have any insights into bargaining? What would you say would be something to keep in mind when you enter the stores?
I don't know. You know, I guess you just kind of need to have a price in your mind with what you want to pay before you start, you know, talking to somebody, because you know, you could go on forever and maybe, you know, they could still come down.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I always thought about be flexible, that bargaining is not about setting a price and demanding them to do it, but to meet in the middle, something where you and the seller, where you both be satisfied with what happens. You know, if he says 10 and I say 5, he says 8, maybe say 6, and then you meet at 7, and both of you walk away happy, and it's a good transaction.
Okay. One thing that's happened to me a couple times is I found myself not willing to go to the vendor's lowest price, and they've been, I don't know if they've been offended, but they've been sort of short to understand why it is that I can't see that this is a good price. Well, first of all, I'm not from here, so I don't know if it's a good price or not. But second of all, I have to tell them honestly, you know, I have this price in my mind of what I'm willing to pay. So sometimes it might be an issue of I just need to take a notch down on the quality scale and look for something else. You know, that's many times I find myself saying, you know, that's beautiful, and I can see that there's good craftsmanship there and that you're proud to have this in your store, but I'm not willing to go to your price. Maybe I need to look for something different.
I just don't have any money in my pocket.
Yeah.
And there is a perception that because we're Westerners and because we're Americans that we have money.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make sense to them that we don't. And, you know, being college students and young adults, I mean, we don't have deep pockets. You know, we're here on limited budgets, and it takes a little bit of understanding on their part, too, to realize that all Westerners are not ridiculously rich. So I want to move over back to Anthony and ask him for one of his little bits of advice. So, Anthony, we talked to Josh and Julie about some of their advices for bargaining and going shop to shop. Well, what do you say? What's one of your bits of advice for people listening?
Normally, unlike in the U.S., have your money out ready to go.
Oh, good one.
Because once they see that you have money, and if you walk out the door, they see that as their money walking out the door.
Yeah.
So they're more likely to give you a deal with what you have in your hand, and that's what you're willing to pay for the item.
So did that work for you today?
Several times today.
Yeah? What's one of the things you got?
I was able to get a few statues of the Holy Family.
Yeah.
And a few rosaries and crosses today.
Right, so I bet people at home will think those are some great gifts coming to them. So
Absolutely. Good
buys. So were there any negative experiences had from selling and dealing with sellers in the last couple days and haggling?
A couple. I think I'd say I've had a couple.
Just a couple?
Yeah. And I thought I had a plan going into each of these shops, but apparently my plan fell apart when I went in. But and I'd also say I would not be an impulse buyer in any of these shops because you will definitely be had every time you go in. But with that being said, I was in a store today, and it was near closing time, but it wasn't yet closing time. And one of the gentlemen, the son of the owner, offered me a nativity scene for a pretty good price, but I wasn't too thrilled about the actual piece itself, so they gave me a 25 shekel or something for a great price. And I walked away, and out of the blue, the father walked up and told me to leave the store. He said it was closing time, I needed to go home. And he told me that repeatedly. And I kind of forgot where I was, and I told him that that wasn't very nice of him to say that. In some other words, and he kind of put his arm on my shoulder and escorted me out of the store. And as I was walking away, he yelled a phrase that I won't say on this tape, but I knew not to go back in the store, or I won't be giving my business when I go back tomorrow. So,
So, I mean, buyer beware. Not every experience out there is a rosy good one, and not every seller out there is good intention.
But there are some people out there, though, that if you do walk out of their store, they start yelling at you, saying, you know, cutting half the price, cutting a third, cutting 75%, to the point where it is what you want. So, it's just, you know.
Yeah, it's worth a look in, but don't be surprised if some people get kind of brisk with you when you leave.
Yeah, I was walking around with Roger earlier, and I witnessed the situation. He didn't end up buying that particular set, but originally I think he had been bargaining for this one at about, let's say X amount of shekels or dollars, whatever it was. And as we walked out of the store, it went from being, 200 to 150 to 130 to 100 in a matter of about 7 seconds. It was funny as we were walking.
Sometimes they just got to make a sale.
I still didn't buy it, so.
Yeah. So, look for a while and then start thinking about what you want to buy and always, feel like you're getting a good deal. And if you feel like you're getting a good deal and you'll take it home and enjoy it yourself or give it as a gift, you can be satisfied. So, that was our first big experience in the city, Roger.
And then they also try and put a disclaimer on most of their merchandise by saying, it's not made in China, not made in India.
Made here, real olive wood.
It's particle board.
It's also a good idea to learn the local language in whatever country you're visiting, just like you would at home, and
thank the local shop owner for letting you shop, even if you don't buy anything. You know, today, a lot of the vendors, you know, when you would leave, would say shalom.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
go in peace. And
that's true.
And if you speak Arabic, you could say shukra, you know, say thank you. You know, and they it goes a lot further in negotiating when you thank them in their local language.
Yeah.
I think we also should say something about we had a great experience at one of Anthony's friend's father's business in the Muslim
quarter. Oh, yeah. That's on my list. That's my last thing to go to.
Okay. Sorry, John.
No, that's good. That's a great transition. I almost forgot about it.
Okay.
So,
yes, for our listeners, one of my coworkers at the airline I work for, he was born in Bethlehem, and I told him that I was going to his home, and he gave me a few places to go look at, and very kind, just like the people here, you know, told me that his family would come pick me up and give me a cell phone and feed me, and I told him, you know, it wasn't possible with the tour group that we're with, but he did tell me where his father's pizza place was in the old city, inside the corridor, the Muslim corridor. So both Josh's and Roger and I went out on a mission to find, which no address, just a street name and the name of the vendor. Walked in and I saw the green gate pizza that my friend's dad owns, and walked in and sat down to three gentlemen sitting peeling vegetables and a brick oven in the lower part of the floor with a man shoving pizza dough inside. And the father spoke a little bit of English, and we were able to talk, and I asked him if he was the father of Assam, and he said yes, and welcomed us into his office, and gave us all some pizza dough, some freshly out of the brick oven pizza, cooked pizza dough, and a drink, and sat down and talked to him for a few minutes.
This is a serious pizza oven. It wasn't just your run-of-the-mill one like you see back in the States. I mean, this had a pit in the floor, and it was pretty impressive to see him do this.
And the heat from the oven was just stayed in this room. So these guys wanted to peel these vegetables and do everything inside because it's Ramadan, and didn't want to tempt the other people outside with food.
So yeah, you got a picture down there with Sam's uncle, right, by the pizza oven, in case anybody saw that one online.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. Yeah, I was able to throw a few pizza crusts in the oven and pull them out and put them on the floor. So that was really nice of his family to welcome all of us and offer to feed us.
It was such a gracious welcome, and I think one thing that we had the food, and we were going to, I think, sit outside and eat for a while and talk, and his dad said, no, you have to stay inside and eat it. And then it clicked in our heads that it's Ramadan, which is a holy month for Islam, for Muslims. And they're not allowed to eat from sun up to sundown. When the sun goes down, they eat and have great parties every night during this month. But during the day, they don't eat or drink. They do a lot of work, and they pray, and they go about business as usual. But for him, you know, and in their family to offer us food and drink, you know, while they can't have any.
Yeah.
That was just such a great gesture.
Pretty special.
Yeah.
It was special.
Yeah, it was nice to share that with you guys, too. It was a fun journey, and it was rewarded at the end.
Yeah. So many thanks and blessings go out to Sam and his family for that show of hospitality. And, that was our first day in the city. So tomorrow we've got another full day ahead, off to the Dead Sea, get to float around in the waters and soak up its salts and minerals and rejuvenate our skin a little bit. So we'll get back to tomorrow night and let you know how that went. So until then, you guys have another good day, and we're praying for y'all. Bye.